Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Easter Sunday, April 20th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Theater Squared Season 8 concludes with Hamlet on stage now through May 4th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Shakespeare's epic tragedy is equal parts ghost story, political intrigue, doomed romance, and murder mystery. Tickets and information for Hamlet available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
KUAF Night with the Naturals will be this Thursday, April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together and an on-field photo will be taken of our group. Deadline to purchase tickets is tomorrow. A portion of sales will benefit KUAF. KUAF Night with the Naturals tickets are only available by calling 927-4063 or visit KUAF.com.
Ahead this morning, I'll speak with renowned author Joyce Carol Oates prior to her talk in Fayetteville tomorrow.
And a bit of tinkering before the Amazium opens to children and the community next fall.
But first, about a dozen students from the KIP, or Knowledge is Power program, Delta Charter Schools in Helena and Blytheville, visited the University of Arkansas campus earlier this week. As Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis explains, their visit was part of a larger partnership between the university and the charter school network.
Whitney Watson is a senior at the KIP Delta Charter School in Helena. She went to traditional public school until she reached eighth grade, when she enrolled in the open enrollment public charter school, which is specifically designed to prepare students for college. She said that the differences in the public school she attended and the KIP charter school are pretty clear-cut.
They make us aim higher. They push us. It's a push. It's like a, you have to do this. It's like homework, college. It's a push. It's kind of forced upon you, but it's an agreed thing. But more so at the public schools, of course they want you to go to college. Every school wants you to go to college, but it's not so much as that push and the support that I feel that I have at KIP as I would have at like a public school.
The students, or KIPsters as they were called, were brought to campus to entice them to enroll at the U of A. But that's entirely the point of a partnership between the two entities. Amy Charpentier is the KIP Through College Director for KIP Delta Charter Schools.
The partnership is really about making sure that kids coming out of the Arkansas Delta have the ability to go to colleges where they're academically prepared for them and to make sure they have the funding and support to get through graduation.
The new partnership announced Tuesday will help achieve that goal of getting students through college as the agreement formalizes a pathway for students to graduate from the charter school and to attend the state's flagship university. Chancellor Dave Gerhart explained to the KIPsters what the partnership means for them.
What we want to do is reach out to the KIP School Delta and tell you that this is a great place to come start your education, finish your education, get a degree, and then access the American Opportunity System. We want you to think of the University of Arkansas as the place you want to be in the future. So we welcome you with open arms. We hope this new agreement will help you to come to the University of Arkansas, the flagship of the state. And we want you to know that when you come here, we'll do everything we can to make you successful and to help you become a success in life and to get a college degree.
As part of the formal agreement between the two educational entities, the U of A stands to recruit and enroll about a half dozen KIP alumni, starting with the coming academic year, and up to six eligible students will be provided with full financial support through a grant from the Walton Family Foundation. In return, the KIP schools will be made available as a learning resource for U of A education students. Leslie Yingling is the Director of College Access Initiatives and Diversity Affairs Outreach at the U of A. She says that this isn't the first time that KIP Delta Schools and the U of A have worked together.
They were the founding partners in our U of A Delta Schools College Completion Consortium about 4 years ago. They have worked with College Access Initiative, which is my program, for all the years since then, participating in our outreach and summer programming. This partnership that's just being announced is just beginning, and what it really is doing is building on existing work that we've been doing and formalizing some of the resources that we're able to offer their students.
But regardless of where the KIPsters end up attending college, The outreach efforts by the U of A are about increasing college attainment for students from underserved areas. 88% of students served by KIPP Delta schools in Helena and Blytheville are from low-income families. And according to the 2010 census, only 10% of Americans aged 25 to 29 and from the lowest economic quartile have completed a degree program at a four-year college. Charles Robinson, the U of A's Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Community Relations, told the Kippsters that college success is key to the partnership between the educational entities.
Wherever you go, even though we know we're going to get a good number of you here, I'm real excited about that, but wherever you go, we want you to be successful. And that's the beauty of this partnership. We care about you whether you come here or you go to other schools. We want you to be successful. It's not good enough just to get into college. We want you to get through. I bet you've heard that before, haven't you? Yeah, I know you talk a lot about that at KIPP. We want you to get through. We want you to graduate and go on and do great and wonderful things. And so we're very, very proud of what you've achieved thus far and want you to continue to work hard.
And the educational partnership isn't just about getting Kippsters through college. Amy Charpentier of KIPP Delta says that next month, much of the first class of Kippsters to go to college in 2010 will graduate with their bachelor's degrees. She says she's eager to see what those students, as well as the ones who will soon enter college, will do once they graduate.
We know lots of our students plan to come back to be in our own community as social workers or teachers, or to work with other organizations to make their community better, which we're really excited about because it isn't what we dreamed of, but it's what we have always hoped for. And so we're excited that they'll be able to give back and show students from our own community what it means to have a college education and what it can do to providing for your family and making the community more better generally.
The U of A is the latest college to partner with KIPP schools across the country. Other universities with similar partnerships in place include Duke, Georgetown, and UC Berkeley. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. For over 30 years, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center has been serving the community through its facilities in Washington County. But later this month, the organization will open a second facility in neighboring Benton County. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report.
Since 1982, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center has offered free, comprehensive support to survivors of sexual assault. One of the services this nonprofit organization provides is clinical forensic exams performed by a sexual assault nurse examiner within 72 hours of an assault. The agency has offered these exams at its Fayetteville location, but soon, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center will also have a presence in Benton County. Executive Director Ann Shelley says the new clinic at the Center for Nonprofits at St. Mary's will open later this month, which she feels is poignant, given that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
So if you had come here for a rape exam, you would be met in the lobby, and the advocate would bring you up to our discreet clinic location here. And once this door is shut, you would not leave until the exam is done.
Depending on the situation, that can take anywhere from 2 to 6 hours, though Anne notes 6 hours really is on the long side. The exam area is a small room with pale green walls. White sticky notes dot the walls, denoting where items will be placed. Once it's completed, the room will include an exam table, a desk, and some kitchen cabinets, and says will contain supplies and help the room feel more warm. Artwork will be added to the walls, and Anne is talking to a sexual assault survivor with a background in graphic design about decorating a shade that will be drawn over the room's sole window. The room is equipped with a sink as well as an adjoining bathroom that contains a toilet and a shower. Anne says oftentimes the first thing victims want to do is bathe following an exam.
And that's, I think, one of the hardest things for folks who are just recently victimized. We really, to preserve the evidence to the best possible ability, would mean that you don't shower, you don't drink, you don't go to the bathroom. All of these things that you're asking someone, and that's the very first thing they want to do. So one of the things that we're grateful here, and this being an old hospital, is that our exam room comes with an adjoining bathroom that has a shower in it. That is private, and that our client, once they have had the exam, has an opportunity to go and do whatever they need to get rid of that.
The Crisis Center serves residents from Benton, Washington, and Madison counties. Clients are often referred to the center by police, emergency room personnel, or even other nonprofits like the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter. Melanie Palmer is the shelter's executive director.
We serve a lot of clients who are rape victims as well as victims of domestic violence, and a lot of times they don't want to drive down to Washington County to receive services. Sometimes they'll even tell us things like, I would receive those services if they were here, but I don't want to drive all the way down to Washington County. They're in trauma. It's not a great situation. And so it's really critical to have those services up here so that they're accessible to people in Benton County and so that we can get victims the help that they need when they need it.
The clinic also includes a waiting area located across the hall from the exam room. This space includes a table and chairs, a sofa, a television, and a coffee maker, as well as decorative curtains and various artwork on the walls to make the room feel more welcoming. When a client comes to the clinic for an exam, they will be met by an advocate and a sexual assault nurse examiner. The nurse is equipped with a sexual assault evidence collection kit from the state of Arkansas. The kit provides paperwork where the nurse can report the patient's medical history as well as information on the sexual assault. The kit also instructs nurses to look for signs of injury, and it contains envelopes where different types of DNA samples can be stored.
A rape kit does not prove whether one was raped or not. It truly is just a collection of evidence that police and prosecutors can use to determine if that is congruent with an assault. It is just part of the evidence. And rape kits don't get processed in one day or 30 minutes like they do on television. We send these to the Arkansas Crime Lab, and then the police, we actually turn these over to the police, who send them to the crime lab, and then they are processed as needed by the police or law enforcement.
Executive Director Ann Shelley says the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center sees about 1,000 new clients each year who use the agency's services, which range from support groups to counseling to advocacy. The organization typically conducts 75 to 80 forensic exams annually, but Ann estimates they will conduct 86 to 90 by the end of this year. She says these survivors are unique because to receive an exam, it means the victims have gone to the ER or the local police within a 72-hour window, because that's the amount of time the Arkansas Attorney General allows for collecting DNA evidence. And they've been brave enough to show up and go through an exam. Ann says legal action is a very tricky thing because 60% of cases are never reported. Citing numbers from the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the National Center for Policy Analysis, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network reports that out of every 100 rapes, only 40 are reported to police, 10 lead to an arrest, and 8 will be prosecuted. 4 will lead to a felony conviction, and only 3 perpetrators will spend a day in prison. Ann says the prosecutor's office has a large burden because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused perpetrator knew the victim was unable to give consent.
And that's, interestingly enough, very challenging to prove. Now, that has no impact on the effect that the incident had on the victim. And that's why we're there 100% of the time to support them and help them through every step of the way. And part of that is making sure that they feel empowered. We see getting the exam and collecting DNA evidence, that's completely the survivor's prerogative whether he or she wants to do that. We see that as a possible step towards their own personal empowerment. And from the minute they walk through the doors or call us, we are trying to help them in whatever way that might look for that individual to find his or her own way towards empowerment.
To help with the journey to empowerment, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center offers a number of other free services, including a 24-hour hotline and counseling. Debbie Fredrickson is a counseling intern at the agency who is working on her master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. Prior to moving to the area for a marketing job, Debbie volunteered at the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault in Kansas City. As a survivor herself, Debbie found counseling helpful.
I focused mainly on individual personal counseling. I didn't tell anyone for 28 years what happened to me, and the very first person I told was a therapist. And so so I took my journey was really just focused on one-on-one. But as soon as I got to a place where I felt like I had overcome a lot of the struggles and the things that I was dealing with, was when I decided I wanted to get involved with helping others. And that's when I called the agency in Kansas City and started volunteering to tell my story to others.
Debbie is a fan of Frank Warren, and his post Secret Project inspired her to seek counseling.
I was just randomly flipping through one of his post Secret books at a bookstore one day, and I saw a secret that was almost, it could have been written by me. And that was the first time that I ever really realized, wow, maybe I'm not the only one who has ever been through this. And so that was a huge moment in my life that, you know, caused me to think, you know what? This isn't something I have to carry with me to my grave, and I can work through this. And so that's, yeah, then when I went to counseling.
Advocacy is another big part of the organization. Amanda Dunn is a medical services victim advocate at the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center. She is one of a handful of advocates who takes turns being on call for victims. If someone calls the hotline in the middle of the night, for example, Amanda may receive a second call asking her to come be an advocate for that person while he or she undergoes an exam.
An advocate is somebody who's on that front line for you. And whether it's in policy, whether it's in, you know, the very just meeting with an individual, it's so important. Here is somebody on the front line for you. Here is somebody who's taking up your cause. And, you know, whether on individual, you know, macro, micro, whatever level, it's so important to not only be heard, but having people, quote unquote, advocate for change for you. You know, I mean, sure, we listen and we offer support in different ways, but we also really want to see things change.
Amanda says although sexual assault is prevalent, she thinks a lot of people feel alone in it. Amanda was sexually assaulted when she was 18. Citing a study published in 2009 in the Journal of American College Health, the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control's website says 19% of the undergraduate women who participated in the study had experienced attempted or completed sexual assault since entering college. Amanda says it's sad and frustrating to consider how many women will be sexually assaulted in college, but because she has gone through it, she has empathy for survivors. Amanda is originally from Wisconsin and says she had nothing like the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center to help her when she was dealing with her sexual assault. However, she did find support from her parents.
I have such awesome parents, and being able to day, night, whenever, and I know it was difficult on them too, but really having that sounding board. And then eventually getting therapy, and I'm a big writer, and so I wrote a lot, but I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my parents and their encouragement and just all the help that they've given me.
Another component of the Crisis Center's work is education. In 2011, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention released the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. According to the report, nearly one in five women has been raped at some time in her life. One in four women has been a victim of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in her lifetime. The report also found that about one in seven men has experienced severe physical violence by an intimate partner, and more than one quarter of male rape victims were first raped when they were 10 years old or younger. The Crisis Center will help educate the local community April 25th with its inaugural Men's March Against Sexual Assault. The event will take place at 6:30 p.m. on the Bentonville Square.
And we have Sergeant Major Lance Nutt from Sheepdog and Sergeant Dominic Swanfield from the Fayetteville Police, who is on our board, and then Papa Rap and DJ Torres, all men coming together to say, you know, the tagline is no more, but it's K-N-O-W, with the N-O kind of highlighted as well, because we want people to know more in the sense of have more awareness about sexual assault and what they can do to prevent it. But we also want people to say no more, as in let's prevent this. Let's awareness plus prevention, will lead to a significant change in the number of sexual assault cases we see in Northwest Arkansas.
Both men and women are invited to attend the march on April 25th. More information is available at nwarapecrisis.org. The agency's crisis hotline is also available 24 hours a day at 800-794-4175.
This is Ozarks at Large. If you are going to sponsor a series of lectures with the words Distinguished Readers in the title, it's hard to imagine a more worthy guest speaker than Joyce Carol Oates. She will be in Fayetteville Monday night as the featured reader in such a series sponsored by the University of Arkansas's Creative Writing and Translation Department. Oates certainly is distinguished. Since 1963, she's had 40 books on the New York Times bestseller list. She earned the National Book Award in 1970, has been awarded the O. Henry Prize, and a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Book Critics Circle. She's written fiction, nonfiction, poetry, essays, and is a prolific book reviewer and literary critic. She also teaches. She's a professor at Princeton. Last month, I talked to Ms. Oates in anticipation of her appearance in Fayetteville. She says of all her endeavors, the ones most closely linked are teaching and her public readings.
It probably relates to teaching, because when you're teaching, you're obviously speaking in public and meeting people and discussing literature and ideas and so forth. So I think being a writer is a very, obviously very solitary and can be somewhat lonely occupation. I always thought I would be a teacher already when I was in first or second grade. So that's been very natural to me to go out and give readings and meet people.
Joyce Carol Oates says her teaching is invested in the analyzation of writing. For her classes, including a graduate seminar she's teaching this spring at NYU, she assigns her students great works like the short stories of Ernest Hemingway or the poems of William Carlos Williams.
Works of fiction that are helpful to me, to the instructor, you know, to look at the craft, for instance. The very elegant craft that goes into a Hemingway short story is very helpful for a writer to be always reading in that way. You know, not so much just reading for enjoyment or entertainment, but reading to see how it's put together. So the teaching that I've done has always dealt with fiction analysis.
She takes a similar approach to her own writing, analysis and more analysis. She says she reads sentences aloud as if they're poetry. She studies word choices and paragraphing and the structure of things that are not discussed or even thought about usually outside of a classroom. And she reads all the time. She describes her reading as wide and indiscriminate.
I get lots of new galleys. I have found galleys on my desk here. I might just, instead of doing my own work, I might just sit and read a story or a novella or something, you know, just sort of spontaneously or, you know, without any purpose to it except enjoying it. Then I often reread. But since I have so much work that I'm doing, I've assigned two long stories for my students for this week, so I'll be rereading them. One by H.P. Lovecraft and one by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, so I'll be reading that. I often am reviewing.
You can gain some insight into how the writer works by searching out an interview Joyce Carol Oates did with the Washington Post last September. She was interviewed by herself. In that piece, she pointedly asks herself questions about writing and discusses the anxiety she says is associated with writing. In fact, she says the more anxiety she feels, the more she knows she's headed in the right direction.
Well, yes, I think so. I'm working on something now that is very frustrating, so I keep trying to get into it. You know, I'm on page 2. I've written many, many, many pages, but I keep going back and I keep chiseling away. It's as if there is a big, very large block of granite, and something shapely is inside it, and I'm just sort of chiseling away, and I think that is it's the opposite of feeling that you've gotten it right the first time. It's sort of a feeling that you have to keep trying. So you feel stressful and frustrated. Now, I think it may be the case that people who are serious writers and artists are the ones who are not satisfied with what comes out first and keep trying and see if you can make it better, come back to it, try again. And I'm just guessing. There may be great artists like Mozart who just get it perfectly the first time. But many composers like Beethoven, even Chopin, they had ideas, but then they had to work with them. So there are all kinds of emotions. There's sort of self-disgust and dismay. And then I go out for a walk or go running, and I get some new ideas. So I come back and I try it again. So there's a little feeling of excitement, you know, of a new way to tell the story.
She says she may read from that Washington Post self-interview when she's at the town center Monday night. Expect some amount of analysis of what writing is and what it can mean. She seems to be constantly evaluating the act. And she writes apparently nonstop. She's averaged 2 published books a year during her professional career. During our conversation, she talked about a project she's currently working on that's been with her for years.
So at the moment, I'm writing a memoir piece about a girl I went to high school with who committed suicide her freshman year in college. And I always wanted to write about her. She was a friend, and I wanted to talk about, you know, issues of suicide and all that. And I'm sort of trying to deal with this and having a really difficult time, because when I knew her, of course, we didn't know she was going to commit suicide. And so it's falsifying to write about her as I knew her in high school with this sort of secondary knowledge, if you follow my meaning. Well, the problem, I think, for the retrospective vision in a memoir is that you know too much. You know, you know how someone is going to turn out. Somebody dies young. When you lived and knew that person, you had no knowledge of the future.
Right.
So it's how do you evoke the past in an honest way when you already know the ending of something? I'm finding that extremely challenging.
Joyce Carol Oates will be at the Fayetteville Town Center at 7 p.m. Monday night. The event is free and is open to the public and is part of the University of Arkansas's Creative Writing and Translation Program's Distinguished Lecture Series. She talked with me from her home last month. This is Ozarks at Large.
Earlier this week, ground was broken at the site of the Future Amazium in Bentonville, an amazing museum that will engage the imaginations of children and their families. The explosive event was a groundbreaking with no shovels allowed. It wasn't about the turning of dirt, but rather the fulfillment of an idea. Earlier this week, I was able to release my inner child by visiting the current Amazium project location, where there is a tinkering studio. Executive Director Sam Dean took me on a tour of the studio. We made some discoveries along the way. Prior to coming to the Amazium, Dean spent 5 years working for the Exploratorium in San Francisco. That museum was founded on the concept that the world is a knowable place, and creating a museum not of artifacts that you look at, but a place of ideas, and engaging its visitors to learn about themselves and the world around them. He brought this concept and a tinkering studio with him to the Amazium project. There are now 7 tinkering studios in the state of Arkansas. When the Amazium moved their offices to this location off the Bentonville Square last June, Dean says they decided to use a different tact.
Instead of having a place that had offices for our preview center that's just full of offices, we decided to cram ourselves, double up and triple up in our small little offices and create, set up a space for Tinkering Studio, a place where as people wander in and want to learn more about the Amazium, the best way to learn about the Amazium is to learn by seeing something that you'd be doing there. And we thought the Tinkering Studio was the best example.
As a place to try ideas and play around with them to make sure they fit in this community and to see what families here get excited about. You can do anything in here. There are materials, there's space, tools, and facilitation to be able to make any idea come alive.
It's really built around, though, a really tight philosophic approach that we want to, you know, over time people have lost the, have migrated away from working with our hands, from making stuff, from taking stuff apart, understanding how things tick. And so the studio, you can do anything here. It's a place where ideas can wander, but it's really based around material fluency and using our own hands to express our ideas in the world.
As we chat, Dean and I sit at a butcher block top table in the center of the work studio. On a far wall is a large flat screen TV, which loops a video taken in the tinkering studio in San Fran. Below and to its left is the Cabinet of Curiosity, a wooden cabinet with glass windows. It's modeled on classic collections of the Victorian 1700s and 1800s, when amateur scientists would find stuff like shells, tortoise shells, tree samples, and bones from other parts of the world, bringing them back home as living repository of natural curiosities.
Well, here at the in the Tinkering Studio, it's a place for us to have a repository of ideas of projects past. So as I open it up, we're able to go inside here, and although there are some toys that are in here, some good wind-up jittering toys, these are all things that have either been built in the studio or meant to inspire projects that happen here.
From the collection of objects in various shapes and sizes, some handmade, some made by machine, he pulls out a toy from Kiekerland. It uses a motor similar to what can be pulled from a cell phone or PlayStation, and the weight is a little off-center.
It dances, it jitters, it moves about. So the idea is, how can you take this idea and make something of your own?
Dean brings out his toy he built with inspiration from this one in the cabinet. Looking little like the original toy, that's okay and encouraged. Dean's resembles an R2-D2 with a tin can-like body, long wire arms holding markers that draw the toy's path as it wobbles and dances across the surface. Some added nails and marbles loudens its movements. Though different, it's obvious Dean took the original idea and went with it. In other projects, tinkerers are asked to use elements found in nature for their creations, such as light. Dean pulls a tube from the cabinet that resembles a short, squat kaleidoscope. It's been made from Mylar film, wax paper, and a concrete tube. He carries it across the room to a row of LED-colored lights and holds it up.
And then you can get some interesting color mixing happening in there. So you sometimes get some, right, once you get the purple, there's no purple light, there's a blue.
Oh,
sometimes you get yellow in there. Anyway, so it's a good chance for kids and adults to make an art piece that plays around with something that we mess around with every day, light. One of the most, I think, one of the more entrancing features.
He says kids have really taken this idea and gone with it, creating their pieces in a variety of shapes and sizes, which is the ultimate goal. Tinkering is not a formula. It's a phenomenon, requiring tinkerers of all ages to learn from themselves and from each other. Parents are encouraged to participate in programs with their kids.
What we love about that is that we had parents who were sitting down making their own. We had kids making their own. And then you had these wonderful moments where parents were struggling with the materials and their kids leaned over and helped, and vice versa. And it was just really neat. In lots of ways, the light box we were making was an outcome of the workshop, but also was this wonderful moment where kids were seeing their parents try out new ideas. And that's cool, to see your parent like really get excited about learning and messing around with something.
Wind is another element allowed for play with the help of a wind tunnel. It's made from items picked up at any home improvement store. It's a plastic tube held together with wood and sits atop a fan aimed upward and up into the tube. He turns the machine on and grabs me some props to play with. I toss a green plastic strawberry basket into the column of air from below, just to see what happens when the hamper meets the air.
There we go. Ah, clear out. Look at that. I like bouncing.
We also try toilet paper rolls and Dixie cups, which we tear to form a fan-like thing and tape it to another Dixie cup, guessing and testing to see what happens as shape and weight is changed. Dean and I talk potential changes and what we expect them to result in. He says these are the types of questions that are fun to talk about with kids, because each child has a different goal. Some want an object to hover inside the tunnel. Others want theirs to be thrown out of the top or to spin around.
It's really fun to watch kids and their adults that are with just play around with materials, make tiny cuts and tears and test and retest. And really that's a hallmark of an engineer, right? You're making small little changes to end up with whatever goal you want. It's not the goal for us. We just put an interesting phenomenon there and we want kids and their families to play with it.
He says families can play for 20, 30, or 40 minutes just with the wind tunnel, evolving 8 or 9 iterations of an object. Bins of tools such as clothespins, masking tape, crepe paper, cardboard and plastics in various shapes and sizes, screws and wire. These bins line the walls of the tinkering studio. It's equipped to make objects from the very simple, such as a paper hat, to those wind-up toys, using the familiar to create items either unfamiliar or not familiar in that medium. The tinkering studio is just one of many exhibits that will be at the Amazia, which will be completed sometime next year. On that center butcher block table is a model of the Amazium, which will rest near Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. With the assistance of a pointer, a plastic hand with its index finger extended, Dean shows me around the future museum. A butterfly-shaped roof helping the building to fit into the surrounding nature and architecture. When completed, there will be 20,000 square feet of exhibit space,
which has everything from a nice little local grocery store. You know, kids spend most of their time, we laugh, where do kids spend most of their time? They spend it at home, they spend it at school, and they spend it at a grocery store, probably the third most frequently visited place for kiddos growing up, except this puts little kiddos in the front seat.
A real semi-truck will be nearby, donated by Walmart, and providing visitors the ability to climb inside the cab of a big rig. Innovation Alley is the backbone between three classrooms, which include the Hershey Lab, an art studio, and this tinkering studio, which will look much as it does here, but perhaps larger. Dean says this area is where kids will spend much of their time, learning and exploring the world in a deep and profound way. Much like its neighbor, Crystal Bridges, the Amazium has an outdoor space for exhibits and exploring, with a full acre for messing around in nature and complete with space for the community. A science experiment in itself, the groundbreaking for the museum was held last Wednesday. A completion is expected next fall. For information on this amazing museum, or events or summer camps, visit their website, amazium.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Next time on Living on Earth, the banana is one of the world's favorite foods, but a deadly fungus that threatens its survival is spreading.
There are at least two locations in the Middle East, Jordan and Oman, also in Mozambique recently, but we don't know whether it's made its way to Latin America yet. Time will tell.
And time will tell whether scientists can find a cure. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Living on Earth, tonight, beginning at 5 on KUAF.
Last Saturday, the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality and Pride, People Respecting Individual Differences and Equality at the University of Arkansas, held a statewide LGBT summit on the U of A campus, the first of its kind. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The day-long Arkansas LGBT Summit 2014, which drew as many as 100 activists and participants from around the state, featured a dozen workshops on civil and marriage rights, violence against gays, religion, gay youth, transgenderism, even financial and legal planning.
And that has to be a state that recognizes same-sex marriages, so you go there.
This is the second summit organized by Pride, based at the University of Arkansas. The first was more of a local event staged in 2006. Flannery Wasson serves as Pride president.
Well, Pride was established in 1983, and prior to Pride being an official RSO, which is a registered student organization, it was kind of fostered by, we like to call, the mothers of the Razor Dykes. And so prior to being official, we had a kind of an underground, very active student body. But then in 1983, we actually were able to get funding and officially recognized, and that meant that some of our meetings were, you know, safer than others. In our history, there have been, you know, some threats, and some of our meetings had been firecrackered and everything. So I'm very thankful to now be the president, and we have faced, you know, really no scrutiny or anything. We're a very respected RSO. We do actually a lot. We've won a few awards in the prior years for our events on campus, which are mostly educational or also social. So we've been really thankful to have come from such an underground history, but now it's very open and everyone's welcome to join, and we've had a lot of great support from the students.
Lawson, who is straight, is a senior political science major. She got involved in gay civil rights after starting a gay straight alliance while attending high school in Fort Smith.
I feel like my orientation sometimes helps me, and other times I keep real quiet because it doesn't really matter. You know, rights are rights, so.
Participant Dina Windor from Rogers says it's important for straight Arkansans to learn about others who are different.
Because it's a very important tool for people in general to have more love for each other. I'm transgender. I'm male to female.
David Walton, who volunteers for the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, says he came to the summit to learn more about different orientations.
I'm gay. I'm accepting of gay and lesbians, but it's more difficult for me to deal with others like trans and stuff until I understand them. So understanding these people will help me work with them better and understand.
According to census records, 3.5% of the adult population identify as LGBT, and more than 700,000 identify as transgendered. But those numbers likely skew low and are expected to rise in coming years as LGBT civil rights, such as gay marriage, are increasingly enacted at the state and federal level. Jamie Renee, a male-to-female transgender activist from Fayetteville, presented a workshop titled Transgender 101. She says this was the largest turnout of transgendered participants she's ever seen.
Yes, we have a very good representation here. I'm very happy because 5 years ago that was not the case.
And why was that?
I think it's becoming more and more acceptable. And we're becoming more and more comfortable with ourselves. I've been doing this for 14 years.
The presence of more transgendered participants could likely be traced to the summit's keynote speaker, Tommy Luckett. She's a 36-year-old African-American trans woman from Helena who now lives in Little Rock working for the Health for Life Clinic, which serves the transgender community. At the summit, she spoke about conflicts within her community.
There's all types of discrimination, and there's even bickering within the transgender community. I just really want us all to come together. I mean, how can we ask for equality if we can't even get along?
For example, Luckett points to passing.
Who's passable and who's not? Who looks more like a woman versus who doesn't? And there are all these cliques, which I really want to do away with. That's why I haven't been a part of any support groups, because the word support is like tossed out of the window. And so basically it's all about who looks more like a woman. And that's not anything I want to be a part of.
Then there's sexual preference within the transgender community.
Well, in lay terms, you have transgender who identify as straight, and they seek out straight men. You have transgender who identify as lesbian. They want to live their lives as a woman, and some even go through the entire gender reassignment surgery only to end up being with a woman, you know. But to me, each his own. I have no right to judge anybody. I've gone through a lot of that myself, and I wouldn't want to inflict that pain on anybody else.
Tommy Luckett says transgendered individuals continue to get the brunt of bias in the U.S., so it's important to come out, to take a stand.
No longer will I lurk. I'm here. I'm human. And that first and foremost, I am a human being. I pay my taxes and I'm law-abiding citizen. So I want to just be out in society as well. And I think that that's the message that we're trying to get across today.
The summit was sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, a grassroots advocacy group working to achieve full equality based in Fayetteville. President James Rector.
When we first started this, we thought it was going to be this very, you know, very small event. We didn't know the numbers were going to be what they were. So I was ecstatic to see, you know, when we had this huge amount of registration and people just contacting us. But the ultimate dream and goal for what we want to do is to have a continuous annual summit that would be statewide.
The last attempt to organize a statewide coalition occurred in 2001 under the Arkansas Equality Network. Previous to that, a half dozen local and state groups formed, only to dissolve. James Rector also serves as field coordinator for the Human Rights Campaign, based in Washington, D.C., spearheading an Employment Non-Discrimination Act campaign in Arkansas.
We were urging U.S. Senator Pryor to vote in favor of it, which we successfully did. The interesting thing from that is we kind of got this snapshot of a lot of people that aren't aware of what protections we have or don't have, and that's both LGBT and ally community. Most people don't know that we're the second state in the South that has, you know, strong anti-bullying laws that cover sexual identity and orientation. Most, if you ask the average Arkansan, they don't know that. You know, there's that moving in that good direction, but there's still a lot of work we can do with adoption, immigration, non-discrimination in workplace and housing. And I think though that like key people are paying attention and you know finally listening to what the LGBT movement needs to be in this state.
James Rector has been traveling this state, delivering the results of a survey conducted by the Human Rights Campaign Fund on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered Americans, including in Arkansas. Rector says nearly 1,000 Arkansans responded to HRC's survey.
And the demographic kind of, you know, breaks down. It was definitely more heavy on gay white men and women. So they're actually going back now and doing more focus group studies with transgender and African American or people of color, Hispanic, Latino, that community. They're doing a little bit more actual focus groups so we can find out more information.
The final survey results will be used by groups such as the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality to reach out to culturally diverse LGBT Arkansans, an organizational priority, James Rector says. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Happy Easter to you.
Yes, happy Easter.
And Easter figures in the montage that we have for this Sunday morning.
The Easter Bunny.
The Easter Bunny?
Right. Well, sort of. Sort of the Easter Bunny.
I thought we did the bunny last year.
We did do the bunny last year, but a bunny hops or jumps, right?
Almost every bunny I've ever seen, yes.
Right. So I used jumping as the theme for this morning's montage.
Jive. I know you dug this mellow jive, cause you dig it on the mellow side.
Aren't you gonna try to grab me?
A friend of mine was up about 20 floors with a jumper a few years ago, and the jumper grabbed him, and they went off, and 20 floors down, just mashed them all over the pavement. Couldn't tell which legs were with which arms were with which, and it was a terrible mess. I tell you, I almost threw up myself. I just like your name and address, that's all.
Now the homeboy's in your face. He gonna stay here to see if you punk out.
We could be like this for days, man.
No, you won't. Because after you see that you ain't no punk and that you don't punk out, he's gonna ask you where you from.
Work, Sinora, work it all the time. Jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you, jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay,
what's your name?
My name's Triss.
First jumper, Triss. Welcome to Dauntless.
Jump, huh? Jumping rope is good exercise, and it's a lot of fun, too. Now, you can either do it with your friends, like these guys here, or you can do it alone, like this guy here. You ready? Oh, thank you, thank you. I couldn't have done it without the rope.
To see how you did on the jump montage, go to our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
It is Sunday, April 20th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Welcome back.
I think it's finally spring.
I think you're right. I think we can, you know, tie winter up with a bow and
send get it. Rid of it.
Yes.
It's a beautiful day, and we're going to talk about a beautiful play. How is that for a segue?
Very well done.
As You Like It is on stage at the University Theater this weekend and
part
next.
Part of what is kind of like Shakespeare Month in
yeah.
Northwest Arkansas.
Hamlet,
and then the Royal Shakespeare, the improv group that's
mm-hmm.
coming to Walton Arts 10 Center.
10 by 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds fascinating. But here's a spin on As You Like It that I've never heard spun before. Morgan
spin
Hicks
it.
Is directing it, and she says Rosalind, who is basically the lead, mm-hmm. is Shakespeare's feminist Hamlet.
Okay.
Never thought about that.
I haven't either.
Like the show, if you don't remember the plot, As You Like It is a comedy about people who have been banished to the Forest of Arden for all sorts of reasons. Rosalind's banished by her uncle, and I don't remember exactly why. She annoyed him somehow. But the forest, as Shakespeare always used it, is this magical place. Morgan described it as a gypsy artist wonderland. And Rosalind goes in disguised as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately runs into the great love of her life, of course.
That's how things happen
in the magical forest. A lot of mistaken identities, a lot of confusion. And interestingly enough, it is the biggest female role in all of Shakespeare's work.
Now, that does not surprise me.
So it should be a lot of fun. Might be a nice afternoon. 2:00 today and again April 23rd through 27th at University Theater. Tickets are $16 for adults.
Last production on the university campus, I think, until
summer. Also today is the Earth Day celebration in Northwest Arkansas, the 10th annual at the World Peace Wetland Prairie in South Fayetteville from 1 to 5. Music, games, face painting, and more. Hamlet, of course, continues at Theater Squared. That's at 2 and 7 today and continues next weekend. Tickets are $24 for adults. Speaking of crazy actors, Mark Landon Smith is going to do a little monologue tonight at the All You Need to Know show.
Which is at Maxine's.
Erica Wilhite's Craziness. There's going to be the musical comedy of Sam Letchworth, songs from Ghoul Goes West.
Okay.
What is that? I don't know,
okay,
but I love it. Mountain Shore and Hot Milk.
I have yet to make it one of these.
And they're pretty interesting.
They
really
sound
like
so much
yeah.
fun. And sometimes I just want to sit around and name bands because Ghoul Goes West is awesome. 7:00 at Maxine's. It's free to get in, and how much you spend otherwise is up to you.
And that's Maxine's Tap Room in downtown Fayetteville.
And coming up tomorrow, something that I was asked to particularly mention because you can get involved in it. It's a participative painting event. Mm-hmm. Teresa Alber, who is an American-born artist working in the United Kingdom, and she's visiting Bottle Rocket as part of a group of U.S. projects. Her plan tomorrow is to do a 24-hour immersive painting called This One's for You, and anybody who wants to participate can. This happens at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville starting at 10:00 tomorrow morning.
And then going till 10 Tuesday morning?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wow.
And what will they be painting on? Do we know?
I assume a wall because it is a mural. So one assumes they are painting on a wall.
Maybe in the breezeway?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. We should go find out.
We should.
We should go add a little paint to it.
Very
Anybody's
good.
Welcome.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Pine Top.
Pine Top.
You act as though you've never heard of Pine Top.
I haven't.
Pine Top is on Beaver Lake. It's on the edge of Benton and Carroll County. It's actually in Benton County.
I bet it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
All right. Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thank you so much for listening. Everybody have a great Easter Sunday afternoon.
Antoinette Grajeda, brand new show tomorrow at noon.